Chapter 14. Wintering in McMurdo Sound. The Aurora, after picking up six men at Hut Point on March 11th, had gone back to Cape Evans. The position chosen for the winter quarters of the Aurora was at Cape Evans, immediately off the hut erected by Captain Scott on his last expedition. The ship, on March 14th, lay about 40 yards offshore, bow seaward. Two anchors had been taken ashore and embedded in heavy stone rubble, and to these anchors were attached six steel hawsers. The hawsers held the stern, while the bow was secured by the ordinary ship's anchors. Later, when the new ice had formed round the Aurora, the cable was dragged ashore over the smooth surface and made fast. The final moorings thus were six hawsers and one cable astern, made fast to the shore anchors, and two anchors with about 70 fathoms of cable out forward. On March 23rd, Mr. Stenhouse landed a party consisting of Stevens, Spencer Smith, Gaze, and Richards in order that they might carry out routine observations ashore. These four men took up their quarters in Captain Scott's hut. They had been instructed to kill seals for meat and blubber. The landing of stores, gear, and coal did not proceed at all rapidly, it being assumed that the ship would remain at her moorings throughout the winter. Some tons of coal were taken ashore during April, but most of it stayed on the beach, and much of it was lost later when the sea ice went out. This shore party was in the charge of Stevens, and his report, handed to me much later, gives a succinct account of what occurred from the point of view of the men at the hut. Cape Evans, Ross Island, July 30th, 1915. On the 23rd of March 1915, a party consisting of Spencer Smith, Richards, and Gaze was landed at Cape Evans Hut in my charge. Spencer Smith received independent instructions to devote his time exclusively to photography. I was verbally instructed that the main duty of the party was to obtain a supply of seals for food and fuel. Scientific work was also to be carried on. Meteorological instruments were at once installed, and experiments were instituted on copper electrical thermometers in order to supplement our meagre supply of instruments and enable observations of earth, ice, and sea temperatures to be made. Other experimental work was carried on, and the whole of the time of the scientific members of the party occupied. All seals seen were secured. On one or two occasions, the members of the shore party were summoned to work on board ship. In general, the weather was unsettled, blizzards occurring frequently and interrupting communication with the ship across the ice. Only small, indispensable supplies of stores and no clothes were issued to the party on shore. Only part of the scientific equipment was able to be transferred to the shore, and the necessity to obtain that prevented some members of the party landing all their personal gear. The ship was moored stern on to the shore, at first well over 100 yards from it. There were two anchors out ahead, and the vessel was made fast to two others sunk in the ground ashore by seven wires. The strain on the wires was kept constant by tightening up from time to time, such as became slack, and easing cables forward, and in this way the ship was brought much closer inshore. A cable was now run out to the south anchor ashore, passed on board through a fair lead under the port end of the bridge, and made fast to bollards forward. Subsequent strain due to ice and wind pressure on the ship broke three of the wires. Though I believe it was considered on board that the ship was secure, there was still considerable anxiety felt. The anchors had held badly before, and the power of the ice pressure on the ship was uncomfortably obvious. Since the ship had been moored, the bay had frequently frozen over, and the ice had as frequently gone out on account of blizzards. The ice does not always go out before the wind has passed its maximum. It depends on the state of tides and currents. For the sea ice has been seen more than once to go out bodily when a blizzard had almost completely calmed down. On the 6th of May the ice was in and people passed freely between the shore and the ship. At 11 p.m. the wind was south, backing to southeast, and blew at 40 miles per hour. The ship was still in her place. At 3 a.m. on the 7th the wind had not increased to any extent, but ice and ship had gone. As she was not seen to go, we are unable to say whether the vessel was damaged. The shore end of the cable was bent twice sharply, and the wires were loose. On the afternoon of the 7th, the weather cleared somewhat, but nothing was seen of the ship. The blizzard only lasted some 12 hours. Next day the wind became northerly, but on the 10th there was blowing the fiercest blizzard we have so far experienced from the southeast. Nothing has since been seen or heard of the ship, though a lookout was kept. Immediately the ship went, as accurate an inventory as possible of all stores ashore was made, and the rate of consumption of foodstuffs so regulated that they would last 10 men for not less than 100 weeks. Coal had already been used with the utmost economy. Little could be done to cut down the consumption, but the transference to the neighbourhood of the hut of such of the coal landed previously by the ship as was not lost was pushed on. Meat also was found to be very short. It was obvious that neither it nor coal could be made to last 2 years, but an evidently necessary step in the ensuing summer would be the ensuring of an adequate supply of meat and blubber, for obtaining which the winter presented little opportunity. Meat and coal were therefore used with this consideration in mind, as required, but as carefully as possible. The men ashore did not at once abandon hope of the ship returning before the Sound froze firmly. New ice formed on the sea whenever the weather was calm, and it had been broken up and taken out many times by the blizzards. During the next few days, eager eyes looked seaward through the dim twilight of noon, but the sea was covered with a dense black mist, and nothing was visible. A northerly wind sprang up on May 8th, and continued for a few hours, but it brought no sign of the ship, and when, on May 10th, the most violent blizzard yet experienced by the party commenced, hope grew slender. The gale continued for 3 days, the wind attaining a velocity of 70 miles an hour. The snowdrift was very thick, and the temperature fell to -20 degrees Fahrenheit. The shore party took a gloomy view of the ship's chances of safety among the ice floes of the Ross Sea under such conditions. Stevens and his companions made a careful survey of their position and realized that they had serious difficulties to face. No general provisions and no clothing of the kind required for sledging had been landed from the ship. Much of the sledging gear was also aboard. Fortunately, the hut contained both food and clothing left there by Captain Scott's expedition. The men killed as many seals as possible and stored the meat and blubber. June 2nd brought a welcome addition to the party in the form of the men who had been forced to remain at Hut Point until the sea ice became firm. Mackintosh and those with him had incurred some risk in making the crossing, since open water had been seen on their route by the Cape Evans party only a short time before. There were now 10 men at Cape Evans, namely Mackintosh, Spencer Smith, Joyce, Wilde, Cope, Stevens, Haywood, Gaze, Jack, and Richards. The winter had closed down upon the Antarctic, and the party would not be able to make any move before the beginning of September. In the meantime, they overhauled the available stores and gear, made plans for the work of the forthcoming spring and summer, and lived the severe but not altogether unhappy life of the polar explorer in winter quarters. Mackintosh, writing on June 5th, surveyed his position. The decision of Stenhouse to make this bay the wintering place of the ship was not reached without much thought and consideration of all eventualities. Stenhouse had already tried the Glacier Tongue and other places, but at each of them the ship had been in an exposed and dangerous position. When this bay was tried, the ship withstood several severe blizzards, in which the ice remained in on several occasions. When the ice did go out, the moorings held. The ship was moored bows north. She had both anchors down forward and 2 anchors buried astern, to which the stern moorings were attached with 7 lengths of wire. Taking all this into account, it was quite a fair judgment on his part to assume that the ship would be secure here. The blizzard that took the ship and the ice out of the bay was by no means as severe as others she had weathered. The accident proves again the uncertainty of conditions in these regions. I only pray and trust that the ship and those aboard are safe. I am sure they will have a thrilling story to tell when we see them. The Aurora could have found safe winter quarters further up McMurdo Sound towards Hut Point, but would have run the risk of being frozen over in the following summer, and I had given instructions to Mackintosh before he went south that this danger must be avoided. Meanwhile, we are making all preparations here for a prolonged stay. The shortage of clothing is our principal hardship. The members of the party from Hut Point have the clothes we wore when we left the ship on January 25th. We have been without a wash all that time, and I cannot imagine a dirtier set of people. We have been attempting to get a wash ever since we came back, but owing to the blow during the last 2 days, no opportunity has offered. All is working smoothly here, and everyone is taking the situation very philosophically. Stevens is in charge of the scientific staff and is now the senior officer ashore. Joyce is in charge of the equipment and has undertaken to improvise clothes out of what canvas can be found here.